Back to the Saturday local station board meeting, 10 points down with aisle 30 days.
Radio. I've been at KDFA for 40 years. I have fought against using that term because we have never been free speech radio. Don't let right-wing people on the air.
It's your currency. That was Richard Lewinsky.
Thank you.
Bad DJ. Okay, but that's Richard Walensky, the DJ that had William Sapphire and interviewed him when he was ripping the guts out of Poppy Bush over Iran, these, you know, head-chopping medieval child rapists that the U.S. supports, regardless of religion or whatever. But Mr. Bill, the Poppy Bush, Mina Clarkson attendant, wasn't touching the subject of Iran-Contra. And so when William Sapphire did, and Richard Walensky and Lupov had him on the air, they didn't touch it either. And the guy that started the little clip with, this isn't free speech, even though it says it on the meeting. Anyway, but I just had to jump back to the last show because maybe I'll end up with a little clip where he's talking about Kathleen Kane, a name I had not heard before the 9/11 Grand Lake Theater. Talking to a witness, okay, quote, the former Pennsylvania, just to peek at the volume, okay, well, I was seeing our volume level, so back to the post about Kathleen Kane. Former Pennsylvania Attorney General, who's been sentenced to jail for leaking secret grand jury information and lying about it, said in an appeal filing Friday that a judge gave too much power to the special prosecutor who investigated her. Kathleen Kane argued in document filed with Superior Court that Montgomery County Judge William Carpenter's decision to give the special prosecutor grand jury authority was illegal and unconstitutional. Quote, while Judge Carpenter had the inherent authority to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate a grand jury leak, no statute, rule of court, judicial opinion, or other legal precedent authorized him to invest the special prosecutor with the authority to fully utilize the power of the investigating grand jury, her lawyer wrote. The appeal says Carpenter violated the separation of powers doctrine and that he demonstrated a decidedly unseemly personal enmity against her, offering as an example a February 2015 opinion in which Carpenter referred to her as Citizen Kane. He clearly implies that the means which he took with respect to Ms. Kane, investing the special prosecutor with illegal and unconstitutional powers were justified by the need which he perceived to ferret out wrongdoing on the part of Ms. Kane, who he states was guilty of crimes which would not have been uncovered in any way other than the path I took, unquote, wrote Kane lawyer Joshua Locke. The 73-page appeal brief also challenges ruling against Kane's request to have all judges in Montgomery County prohibited from handling her case to be able to put on evidence about a pornographic email scandal in the state prosecutor's office and to have her charges thrown out based on a claim she was being prosecuted selectively and vindictively. Kane, 51, wants the court to dismiss the charges or order a new trial. The first-term Democrat resigned last year after being convicted of 2 counts of felony perjury and 7 misdemeanor counts, including obstruction and conspiracy. Kane, a former prosecutor in Scranton, was considered a rising political star when she won the office in a landslide in 2012, the first woman and first Democrat elected as Attorney General in Pennsylvania. Her critique of how the office had handled the Jerry Sandusky child sexual abuse investigation at Penn State created a rift with some of the lawyers who had worked under her predecessor. When grand jury information about another case was leaked to a newspaper, 2 former Attorney General office prosecutors contacted Carpenter to seek an investigation, while the other case may well have been the Mumia case. Because, guess what?
Wesley Cook at the time. He became the Mumia Guzmán later. Ed Rendell was the prosecutor for the case against Wesley Cook Jamal. But I was privy to the meeting under dubious circumstances where Rendell and about 4 or 5 others, which included Spector, Rizzo, and a few others, they arranged the setup to kill Officer Faulkner because he was actually a good, honest, white cop, a young guy who was trying to do the right thing. He was interfering with the drugs and prostitution trade.
Well, hold it right there, because he had just beaten Mumia's brother, with a flashlight or something, but never mind.
Yeah, certain cops had a piece of the action.
And he had an FBI camera on his seat. But, I don't know, that's a detail out there. Kind of fits along with Sandusky's name and that place.
So Sandusky is actually a co-conspirator in the murder of Officer Faulkner. And of that, there is no doubt whatsoever.
Well, in your mind, but just...
I was there.
From the data accumulated so far on this recording, Sandusky is this university figure who got away with murder for decades, raping kids, and having the establishment go along with it. Now, of course, let me just throw in Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein has Trump and Bill Clinton on his jet and this little Florida Express thing. So your narrative fits perfectly in the power structure's ability to, blackmail those that are out front.
That's well put. So let me add to that very fast. I'll start off with way back in the day with Princess Grace Kelly. She found out prior to 1982 when she died in a car accident, which was not an accident.
You mean Princess Diana?
She found, no.
Oh, Grace Kelly. Oh, yeah.
She found out her prince of a husband was brokering
That's
children
right.
to his turban friend's concubines from a guy named Jeff Epstein out of Pennsylvania who was in the hierarchy of the CIA finders, which Sandusky and the two judges in the Kids for Cash case were nothing but small players. That's why they gave them up. The big issue was the 65 years of child exploitation sales worldwide arranged by Jeff Epstein. And so in 2010, when I handed out 1,400 copies of my affidavit verifying that Jamal is innocent as a first-hand witness, I also walked into the office of Kathleen Kane, the first woman attorney general of Pennsylvania. I gave her five or six cases. I wrote down exactly how it all connected, and that included Jeff Epstein, and she was actually looking into it. The problem was that Jeff Epstein's cousin intervened, spent $2.5 million to set up Kathleen Kane, get her fired, lose her license, and go to prison on completely fabricated charges. That same cousin did the same thing to Shrimp Boy Chow and Senator Leland Yee in California. And that cousin is Dianne Feinstein. And so that was a $3 million setup between putting him into prison because he did two things that they didn't like. You know, Dianne didn't like it, Willie Brown didn't like it, Jerry Brown didn't like it, and a few others. And that is, he was pushing this bill forward that would demand and command real serious transparency for California politicians. Well, those people couldn't afford that, not Jerry and Dianne. And I could talk an hour on each one of them, including the Cabazon gun running, drug running, and three murders that Jerry Brown covered up.
But cousin, you said Dianne Feinstein was Jeffrey Epstein's cousin?
Yes.
Oh, boy, that would be fun to check out.
Well, I don't know if you can verify it, but I know that's what it is. And so Shrimp Boy Chow had, in fact, gone straight. And the mayor, Ed Lee, was supportive of him. So Ed Lee did not die of a heart attack in a Safeway, the way they said. They blew his heart out with one of their frequency energy guns from a distance, which can blow out anybody's heart from anywhere from 5 to 50 yards away.
Well, it was convenient to the story about the Millennium Towers falling over because the money was stolen after the Jim Crow coup, I call it the Y2K Gusano bug by SF, because then there's this big hole next to this big structure that isn't rigidified and filled in, and so over goes the tower. Well, it's kind of related to the Twin Towers because Willie Brown was given the tip not to fly.
Right.
So as the towers are falling in New York and San Francisco, we can see how his testimony in that financial fraud, where did all the money go that should have finished the rail train service? Well, after the Jim Crow coup, the banksters took the money home and... September of 2008. Yeah.
I
I think a lot of Obama's
victory that had them throwing the money to the presidents of, you know, Lehman Brothers, those are Bush cousins, $1 trillion could go to reparations, but no. So anyway, that's just a little local. And Diane, of course, drove a getaway car when the best mayor and first gay supervisor. She was the one who said the suspect is, like, it's the Academy Awards. Not like it's an obvious clearing the path for the horrible 80s where the drug kingpins are going to live. You know, and Gary Webb, of course, finished that story, and look what I got him.
Right.
Anyway, maybe I'll close it because I can start a whole other file. And
in an essay for Prison Radio, Mumia Abu-Jamal says the state of Pennsylvania has put the U.S. Constitution on lockdown.
It happened on the last Wednesday of August, 2018, around 8:30 p.m. The PA system announced a lockdown of the prison, apparently in response to a recent spate of staff sicknesses thought to be related to drugs. Even though the suspected cases occurred in prisons in the western part of Pennsylvania, the entire state system, almost 30 prisons, went into immediate lockdown. Lockdown means no movement in the prison except for staff. That means all prisoners are locked in their cells for 24 hours a day. All visits were canceled. Mail delivery and outgoing mail was canceled. Several days into this process, guards distributed a 3-page memo to prisoners announcing new rules allegedly designed to defeat drug smuggling. Among them, prisons will no longer receive mail, for all correspondence will be rerouted through an address in St. Petersburg, Florida. That office will scan and copy the mail and then send a digital copy back to Pennsylvania. Legal mail will be Xeroxed and a copy given to the prisoner named in the mail. For 3 months, no visitor can purchase food or photos for a prisoner, and no books can be ordered by a prisoner. The DOC, it appears, is having a temper tantrum, and it is engaged in war against all contact with the public. This sounds like the DOC's equivalent of reefer madness. This is, more than anything else, Pennsylvania's DOC's engagement in drug politics. It's a war against the prisoners, yes, but also a war against knowledge. And ultimately, the Constitution itself. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Not long ago, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange could count on American journalists to support his campaign to publish secret documents that banks and governments didn't want the world to see. But just 3 years after a major court confrontation that saw many of America's most important journalism organizations file brief on WikiLeaks' behalf, much of the U.S. journalistic community has shunned Assange, even as reporters write scores, if not hundreds, of stories based on WikiLeaks' trove of leaked State Department cables. Some call him a traitor responsible for what's arguably one of the biggest U.S. national security breaches ever. Others say a man who calls for government transparency has been too opaque about how he obtained the documents. The Freedom of the Press Committee of the Overseas Press Club of America in New York declared him, quote, not one of us, unquote. The Associated Press, which once filed legal briefs on Assange's behalf, refused to comment about him, and the National Press Club in Washington, the venue less than 3 years ago for an Assange news conference, has decided not to speak out about the possibility that he'll be charged with a crime, quote. Bob Woodward has probably become one of the richest journalists in history by publishing classified documents in book after book. And yet no one would suggest that Bob Woodward be prosecuted because Woodward is acceptable in the halls of Washington, said Glenn Greenwald, a lawyer and media critic who writes for the online journal Salon.com. There is no way of prosecuting Julian Assange without harming investigative journalism. Woodward, who rose to fame by exposing the Watergate conspiracy that forced President Nixon from office, told the Yale University Law School audience in November that WikiLeaks' willy-nilly release of documents was madness and would be fuel for those who opposed disclosure. But that appearance came before U.S.
Attorney General Eric Holder launched a criminal probe against Assange. Woodward didn't respond to email seeking comment. Woodward's newspaper, The Washington Post, however, is one of the few that's editorialized against prosecuting Assange. The government has no business indicting someone who is not a spy and who is not legally bound to keep it secret, the Post said. Assange increasingly has presented himself as a journalist in the weeks since Holder's threat to bring charges. He's the website's editor and WikiLeaks publishes editorials. Few could argue that WikiLeaks didn't perform journalistic functions in April when it released video taken from an army helicopter. Of a 2007 incident where army pilots fired on civilians in Baghdad, killing 17 Iraqis, including two employees of the Reuters news agency, and wounding two children. In addition to editing and captioning the video, WikiLeaks interviewed the Iraqi families about the incident. The release of the video, which Reuters had sought for years but had been denied, was widely covered by U.S. news organizations. U.S. journalists have been far less zealous about WikiLeaks, however, in the ensuing months, as the Obama administration has mounted increasingly vocal attacks on the organization over three batches of leaked U.S. documents, military logs of events from the war in Afghanistan, including the names of Afghans who cooperated with the U.S., initial incidents reports from throughout the Iraq war, and most recently thousands of diplomatic cables. The problem with speaking up for WikiLeaks now, said Luke C. Daglish, D-A-L-G-L-I-S, the executive director of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, one of the country's most prominent defenders of press freedom, and one of the groups that backed WikiLeaks in its 2008 court case, is that she doesn't consider Assange to be a journalist. Assange, she said, quote, has done some things that journalists do, but I would argue that what the New York Times does is more journalism. They vet the information, they consider outside sources, they take responsibility, they publicly identify themselves, they do some value added, they do some original, something original to it, unquote, Dalglish said. She added that part of her hesitation to back Assange is that the public knows so little about him and how he acquires information. WikiLeaks, quote, take secrets, but they are secretive. We don't know who they are. I think one thing journalists pride themselves on is transparency. I think people are a little apprehensive because he was releasing information last summer. He had an agenda to bring down the U.S. government, unquote, she said. Quote, I think that makes people reluctant to jump into making a statement, unquote. Greenwald rejects that argument. He noted that U.S. journalists often don't reveal their sources or how they gather information for stories. Greenwald said he thinks journalists aren't rallying to defend WikiLeaks because it has no building, no ties to the U.S., and doesn't feel obligated to consult with U.S. government before publishing. The issue, he said, is that American journalists too often befriend the government and seek its approval for their work. Besides, he said, the Constitution protects everyone's right to publish. Quote, what matters is the activity itself and not who the person is. Bob Woodward is no more entitled to publish classified information than some random person out of the phone book, Greenwald said. Greenwald's position is echoed by Joel Simon, the executive director of the New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists, another prominent U.S. advocacy group that's made one of the rare public arguments against prosecuting Assange. Simon said he and his colleagues had an extensive debate about whether to speak up. In the end, they determined that debating whether Assange is a journalist is irrelevant. If he is prosecuted, it will be because he is a journalist, Simon said. The group sent a letter to Holder on December 17th urging him not to prosecute Assange, warning that it could have a chilling effect around the world. There is a commonality of purpose, Simon said in an interview. The function of WikiLeaks is to take information, particularly classified information, and distribute it to the public. From a legal perspective, it is essentially a journalistic function. We have to respond when there is a threat to journalism, unquote. The current situation even has split former allies in the battle over press freedom. Daniel Ellsberg, who leaked Pentagon Papers to the New York Times in 71, has come out strongly in support of WikiLeaks. But Floyd Abrams, who was the Times attorney in his fight against the Nixon administration's effort to block publication, has taken the opposite position. In an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, Abrams noted that Ellsberg himself kept secret 400 four volumes of the classified Pentagon history that became the Pentagon Papers because he feared he'd harm diplomatic efforts to end the Vietnam War. Abraham said WikiLeaks' publication of so much secret material could lead to tougher restrictions for U.S. journalists. Quote, his activities have already doomed proposed federal shield law legislation protecting journalists' use of confidential sources in the Justice during Congress, unquote, Abrams wrote, end quote. An indictment of him could be followed by the judicial articulation of far more speech-limiting legal principles than currently exist with respect to even the most responsible reporting about both diplomacy and defense, unquote. And if Assange isn't indicted or is acquitted of any charges, Abram warned, Congress might pass, quote, new and dangerously restrictive legislation, unquote. There was no such debate in February 2008 when 12 journalism organizations, including the Associated Press and Reporters Committee for the Freedom of the Press, filed a brief on behalf of WikiLeaks and its domain register, Dynadot, D-Y-N-A-D-O-T, in a case brought by a Swiss bank, Bank Julius Baer, J-U-L-I-U-S-B-A-E-R. The bank filed the suit after WikiLeaks published hundreds of private documents on a land deal that suggested money laundering and tax evasion. It asked the U.S. District Judge in California to enjoin WikiLeaks from publishing the documents and ordered Dynadot to stop hosting its website. The judge agreed but quickly reversed his order after the U.S. journalism organizations weighed in, calling the decision an affront to the First Amendment and WikiLeaks' right to publish. The Justice Department now appears serious about building a case against Assange, though it remains unclear which law he violated. Officials acknowledge that the Espionage Act of 1917 has never been used to prosecute anyone for publication of secret documents. Last month, a U.S. magistrate in Alexandria, Virginia, issued a secret subpoena ordering the Twitter online messaging service to turn over all information it has about five of its users, including Assange, an Army private first class Bradley Manning, 23, the one-time Baghdad-based intelligence analyst accused of unauthorized downloading of the hundreds of thousands of classified U.S. government documents WikiLeaks is now publishing. The subpoena was unsealed Wednesday after Twitter said it intended to notify each of the account holders that their records had been sought, and became public on Friday when one of the account holders told Guardian newspaper in London, in addition to Assange and Manning, the targeted accounts include those of an Icelandic member of parliament and two computer programmers. WikiLeaks, however, argued in a tweet posted Saturday that the records of all 670,000 of its Twitter followers are subject to the subpoena because it demands information about outgoing messages from WikiLeaks' account. Dalglish said her organization might reconsider its silence if the U.S. files a criminal case against Assange. That will depend, she said, on a determination of the case's potential threat to journalism. Alan Bejerga, B-J-E-R-G-A, president of the National Press Club, said his organization also might take a stand depending on what the Justice Department does. The National Press Club is always concerned about any government actions that would harm the ability of journalists to do their work, and any actions taken against Julian Assange that would impede journalism is one we would oppose, he said in an email Saturday. It is difficult at this time to comment on the specifics of a case the government has yet to make, unquote. Until then, it's fallen largely to foreign-based journalism organizations to defend WikiLeaks. In August, Paris-based Reporters Without Borders wrote a letter condemning Assange for publishing the names of Afghan informants, saying it would endanger lives, but it decided last month to provide a mirror site to WikiLeaks' website after the WikiLeaks site came under attack. The change came after lengthy discussion, and because WikiLeaks has since been more cautious about redacting the documents it posts. We, quote, we think WikiLeaks is doing a public service, said C-L-O-T-H-I-L-D-E, Clotilde Lacaze, who directs the group's Washington office. The idea of America heralded as a beacon of press freedom internationally, prosecuting someone for publishing secret documents would have a chilling effect throughout the world, the Australian newspaper editors group wrote in a letter to Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard, whose government also is considering charges against Assange, who's an Australian citizen, unquote. Any such action would impact not only WikiLeaks, but every media organization in the world that aims to inform the public about decisions made on their behalf, the organization said in a December 15th letter. It is the media's duty to responsibly report such materials if it comes into their possession. To aggressively attempt to shut WikiLeaks down, to threaten to prosecute those who publish official leaks, and to pressure companies to cease doing commercial business with WikiLeaks is a serious threat to democracy, which relies on a free and fearless press. That from
the terrible and sinful incidents included in the statewide grand jury report. I sincerely apologize for the past sins and crimes committed by some members of the clergy. I apologize to the survivors of abuse and their loved ones for the times when the church did not live up to her call to holiness and did not do what needed to be done. I apologize. I also apologize to you, the faithful of the Diocese of Allentown, for the toll this issue has taken over the years.
And, yeah.
Philadelphia, of course, was where Mumia Abu-Jamal, president of the Black Journalist Association. And we got one more thing here. Then I'll probably get back to the Philadelphia Crime Solicitation, because anyway, a bunch of details that I probably should get. Anyway, this was the Assange support letter that 10 points down the dial refuses to forward, but it says, for KPFA support to the defense of whistleblowers and journalist Julian Assange, presented at August 18, 2018, KPFA LSB meeting, yet to be voted on. Whereas Assange and WikiLeaks have released a vast trove of primary source material unlike anything that journalists have ever had such ready access to. Whereas WikiLeaks releases have made evidence-based journalism more possible than ever before. Whereas Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have helped expose the role of the U.S. and other governments' war crimes and violations of international law. And whereas Assange and WikiLeaks have in the Podesta emails, Vault 7, the Trade and Services Agreement, and many other releases expose the collusion between government officials, politicians, oligarchs, and corporations against the public interest, including even the survival of life on Earth. Whereas the U.S. government, along with the U.K. government, are seeking to push Julian Assange out of Ecuador's London embassy to be arrested by Theresa May's government in the U.K. government and then most likely extradited to the United States for criminal prosecution. And whereas the U.S. government and the U.K. government refuse to prosecute any of the war criminals that have been exposed by the whistleblowing of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, and whereas there is a systematic effort by the U.S. government to harass, repress, and jail reporters and whistleblowers who exposed corruption and criminal activities by government officials, and whereas U.S. politicians have called for the murder and torture of Julian Assange to silence him, and whereas KPFA and Pacifica Network is also under attack and threatened by the U.S. government and corporations that the U.S. government represents, and whereas the Australia Media Arts and Entertainment Alliance, MEAA, union made Julian Assange an honorary member for life, waived his fees, and called for the defense of his rights. http://www.abc.net.au/.com/journalists-union-shows-sup.com/2383428 Whereas leading intellectuals and whistleblowers, including Daniel Ellsberg, John Kiriakou, Ray McGovern, who's going to be at the Corrett Auditorium on September 30th, that's at the San Francisco Public Library, right by Civic Center of Art, and Colleen Rowley, have called for unity in support of Julian Assange at 1 p.m., that is, Ray McGovern, in San Francisco, on September 30th.
Therefore, be it resolved that the KPFA local station board calls for freedom of Julian Assange and an end to the harassment, including the halting of internet and media access at Ecuador's London embassy, an end to efforts to jail Assange by either the UK government or the US government, and calls for KPFA and Pacifica to launch a campaign on our website and our programming to defend Julian Assange and all journalists and whistleblowers who are coming under increasing attacks by the US government and the corporations who control the government. Lastly, we call on our KPFA LSB delegates to the Pacifica board to make a similar resolution and call for national publicity and programming by all Pacifica-affiliated stations for the defense of Julian Assange and all journalists and whistleblowers who face threats to their democratic rights. Submitted by Steve Zelser, KPFA LSB staff representative, endorsed by Daniel Ellsberg, Pentagon Papers whistleblower, Project Censored, and the Media Freedom Foundation, Randy Credico, comedian, activist, and former WBAI host, Tom Voorhees, elected member of KPFA Local Station Board and Pacifica National Board, and Garrison, journalist, Black Agenda Report, SF Bayview, KPFA News, Mary Ratcliffe, editor, SF Bayview Newspaper, Richard Stone, APWU, San Francisco, SFLC delegate, member, KPFA Community Advisory Board, Dr. George Wright, UPWA.info, Joe Loria, editor, Consortium News, biweekly KPFA Flashpoint, Michael Parenti, book author and political scientist, and this has yet to be passed by either KPFA or